call the meeting to order, and before we get into the meeting, I just needed to announce that prior to the meeting, we did have an executive session. We had to discuss personnel matter, discipline matter, negotiations. That was it?
Students three.
Student matter, yeah. So at this time then, we'll move into our agenda, which you see up here. And we will have a moment of silence and then a pledge. So if you can stand and then we'll pledge the flag back here. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, do we have any citizens that wanted to address the board this evening? Any others? Okay, if you would come to the microphone.
Just me?
Just you. State your name, where you reside.
I'm Meredith Dahl, and I live in Earl Township, and I just wanted to thank the board and the administration for all you guys do for the school district, for the students. We really appreciate just your hard work and your effort to make this one of the best school districts and to keep our kids safe, so thank you for that. If it's okay, I'd like to just pray for the board for everyone to make. Dear God, thank you so much for all those who help make this a wonderful school district for our kids, who want to see our students succeed and do what they can in their lives. God, thank you for each person giving of their time this evening, for all the volunteers on the board, for all their effort. Just pray for wisdom for each one of them, protect our school district, and we just ask that tonight we bring you glory and honor. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, then the personnel report. Hopefully everyone has had the opportunity to review that. And if so, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any other discussion on the personnel report? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is approved. Property and Services, Mr. Rand.
Okay, thank you. We have several action items for next Monday night. The first action item that you see is the bid award for the parking lot project at Blue Oak Ball Elementary School. The attachment shows the bids that came in. It's a bid tabulation sheet. You will notice that we did receive three bids for the project. All bids are pretty close within each other. The lowest responsible bidder was MCA, Murray Construction, who also did the project at Brecknock. We were very pleased to see that. This contractor, as Neil knows, works very well with Neil and his staff. We work very well with him, and as construction goes along, if there's anything that he sees where we can save some money, he always offers it up to us, which is very nice. This does include, as you know, we did go through the township approval process. The township did require some additional drainage mitigation where we have to control that water underneath the parking lot. I did share that at a couple previous meetings where no additional water will go into the swale there, and then also then go on to the neighboring owner's land. So we are controlling, containing that within the parking lot. The second thing is they did ask us to put some additional light poles there. Initially, we were planning on two. We are now up to six. Neil, correct me if I miss if I say anything incorrect. And then the last thing was some of their landscape and site work there, put some additional curving and some additional trees and shrubbery there as well. So what you see for everything of what is required of the township, the lowest bid would be $321,000. There are unit pricing if we would end up getting into some additional excavation, you know, rock removal, those types of things during the project. The timeline for the project, if the board does award this, we would be able to start bringing stools out and we'll be able to finish before the end of the summer for any time for school next year. So any questions at all? Or
how did this price come in with what the architect had originally estimated?
The original individual that estimated it was Jim Hocker with Dirk and Edson. And his initial, back in June of 2014, prior to a lot of what the township wanted us to add in, was about $230,000.
Okay.
So this is considerably higher than what he estimated. I know as we went through the process and looking at the architect, with some of his numbers in relation to the additional things that we had to put in place, I think this came in just right around, maybe slightly below what he estimated. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And again, we do have this money in our cap reserve fund, so it's not
right. It's just interesting. When you hear government officials talking about how they're going to relax regulations, especially in this area where then you see the added cost of what you know.
Well, I think, Neil, I think we were talking today, and I think you were saying like the light bulbs, 10,000 apiece probably.
Yeah, that's probably
10,000.
All those extra lights.
And it just seems that every time our engineers have said something to the county engineer, they would come back with something else. Which is also a reason why it's taken an extra year to design.
Just to be clear, it's both the county and
the county weighs in on.
Yes, both.
I don't want to lay it all at the feet of
right.
They went to the county stormwater management, and they really fall in shape.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Well, I'm sure next time I talk to the county commission, remind them of that.
Any other questions or comments? The next action item is, you know, we typically have this every year, the recommended increase in the breakfast, lunch, and milk prices for next school year. I've said this each year, part of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, we're required to participate in the National School Lunch Program. We need to make sure that the paid lunches, that the reimbursement that we receive for the free meals or reduced price meals are not subsidizing the paid meals. For 16-17, districts that charge less than $2.78 per meal, which we do, are requested to adjust their lunch prices. So according to the state, that gets adjusted by the CPI every year. According to the state, the average or the lunch price, paid lunch, should be $2.78. We're actually proposing, based on the formula, it would be a 15-cent per meal increase for next school year. We are still below. Do you want to open up the attachment, Jeff? We're still below that average, so we'll probably anticipate again another increase next year. But you'll see where then they guide that based on the secondary lunch, where we'll be at $2.55, still about 23 cents below what they say should be the cost of the meal.
We're not in a deficit for this.
No, not at all. Not at all.
If we didn't increase the cost, would we then, for 15 2016 via debt service?
No, the would not be a deficit. That's correct.
No, for 16, you mean?
For 16, 17? No, at this point, in working with Jamie, the director of food services, she doesn't anticipate that. Food costs are going up, but we're required by the federal government to increase the cost. Based on their formula, because we're below the 278, it drives out that 15 cent per
meal. We're required to increase the cost.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
So we're required to increase that price. Where does that extra 15 cents go?
It goes into the food service fund, the cafeteria fund, to help offset any increase in prices and the cost of the food, those types of things.
And any fall through would go to the general budget, right?
Yeah, any fall through would go, it would remain in the food service fund.
Okay.
And then our food service fund is completely self-sustaining. They actually reimburse the general fund. Usually it's the other way with most districts, but they actually reimburse us for trash. They pay for their own repairs. If they need a new mixer or a new piece of equipment, they pay it themselves. So that would just go into their coffers, and as they need things, they could then purchase. But when you do the formula, when Jamie, there's a formula that you need to basically, you record everything in there. You look at the weighted average. You got to do increase. You have to load in the participation, everything at the different sites, and then the weighted average drives out a number, and that's what they say that. You can always go above that amount if you want, but you at least have to be at that amount. And the amount that drove out was the $255 per meal.
And want to commend again Keith and the management you do on this, and also Phyllis and Ella New. You know, the new person is
Jamie.
Right? Yeah. So done a great job of keeping those costs in line. What is the theory behind the difference in prices between elementary and secondary?
I would say it's portion sizes is probably the big thing. It's just kind of been in that ever since I've been here. People have as much at the portion size at the elementary versus secondary. With this, we're still, one of the lowest in the county.
Yeah.
Charging meals. Any questions?
Very good.
The next action item on my agenda is the designation of the agent resolution. This has to do with the snowstorm that we had January 22nd and 23rd, trying to submit our costs for the contracted snow removal to help try to get some money back to help offset those costs. So we will be one of the districts within the county, as well as municipalities, that will be seeking reimbursement. We did this 2 years ago, five years ago, 2000. Okay. We did participate in this, and how much did we get back for that, if you remember?
$18,000.
So all you need to do is sign that resolution, and then Neil and I will take complete all the documentation. We're pretty fortunate because it's really, we work with USNR. So we just take their bills, their invoices, and submit them.
Can I ask a question about the snow removal from this year? So was it, did I understand correctly that this year we hadn't actually moved the snow off-site, and it's the first year we've done that?
Yes, there's some years we don't need to do that because you don't get enough snow that we need to pile it somewhere. You know, if we have snowstorms that come in 4 or 5 inches at a time, the snow can be handled around the outside of the parking lots. But with the snow like the one we had in January, there was no other place to dump it but on the athletic fields. And because it didn't freeze, we had a warm winter, we were afraid that his trucks would cause ruts. If it would have been a year where it was really cold, we would have ran them out there. But there's no way we could have done it.
And that's the difference. We've done that in the past. We've piled snow on the practice field. But if you remember, this winter we were in the sweat of the temperature.
Yeah, it was.
And they actually trucked it off and put it at their site.
Yeah, they did.
So
they didn't pay for it. Do we pay them a Town Strip or Colony Way?
Yes.
Is it included in the bid?
Well, it's everything's hourly.
Hourly.
So whatever we take to run those trucks down there, the clock's running.
Neil, do you recall the total bill for that scheme?
District wide, it was $46,000.
That's really not that. That's not that bad.
It's not, but for one snowstorm.
That's a big bite, but I mean, that was a lot of snow.
A monster snow.
A lot of snow.
That's how quickly, when you budget something like that, how quickly your budget can be dealt with fast. So years when we have a lot of extra. Remember this year, because.
I just asked because somebody was kind of like, well, you know, you're making them do all this extra work. Wait, there's probably a reason to it.
We labored over that decision, and I drove my truck out in the field and it sank. There's no way we're going to put these 30-ton triaxles out here.
And we're spending the redo fields.
Right. Or you have your swimming pool.
Yeah, and a lot of times when we do dump it on the field, we're paying somebody to come in to, you know, clean off the field, cinders and everything else that they pull up from the parking lot.
That's
true. So, yeah, that additional cost. But
it should also be noted, not every school district goes through the hassle to apply for this money. You know, and Keith did. It's extra time, it's extra hours. And I know other school districts got it's not worth their time. Could be. I appreciate that.
Okay, my last action item pretty much is to approve my signing of the voluntary accident insurance renewal for next school year. There's no change in the rates. As you know, we stopped providing all sports insurance except for football only, and most recently this past school year we did not provide the football insurance either, but we did continue to provide the voluntary insurance to parents. That's this insurance right here. This is no cost to the school district. It's offered to parents, and there is no change in the rates. Any questions, comments, concerns? The information item that I have, I just wanted to give you an idea of, you know, what you're hearing about the state budget. As you know, the governor, the most recent budget that was sent to the governor, he pretty much let it pass without a signature. And there was a certain amount of time he didn't act on it, so it, by him not his absence of his signature, pretty much the budget became law. However, the fiscal code bill, which distributes the money, he did veto that. What I'm showing you is looking at the three major funding areas for us, the basic ed funding, the Ready to Learn grant, and the special ed funding. The governor plans to send out the 15-16 BEF money through what he calls the restoration formula. If you recall, several years ago, we lost that money. It was taken. He's actually restoring that money. But the legislature is still working on trying to implement the new basic ed funding commission formula, which was a study that was done and recommendations came out. The issue is still unsettled. So the numbers that I share with you could end up changing before the end of the school year, maybe even after the end of the school year, who knows. But the basic ed funding commission's recommendation based on the amount of money that the legislator sent to the governor, and this was a part of the legislative budget that was submitted to the governor, had us receiving just over $160,000. The governor, through his veto and through his restoration formula, were proposed to get just over $51,600, which is a difference of a reduction between the legislature budget to the governor's budget of just over $108,400. For the Ready to Learn grant, has basically the same thing happened. It's still an unsettled issue as well. You'll see that through the Basic Ed Funding Commission, that was $51,431. The governor was $30,973, or a difference of $20,458. So between those two items, we're down just under $129,000 from the budget that was sent to the governor. Governor's office. There was a recent article in the Sunday paper which was pretty accurate in the differences in the amounts of money. Special ed funding, there was no disagreement there. So what the increase that we did get, the $17,449, we will get. And then the last item was the rental reimbursement, part of the fiscal code bill that he vetoed was our current year reimbursement for our debt service payments. At this point in time, until something gets resolved, we aren't receiving any of our money for this school year, which is the budget calls for about $633,000. Now it'll come in somewhat less because of the previous refundings that we did, but at this point, no district in Pennsylvania is getting any rental reimbursement on current debt. Now, we're not talking about the BRECNOT that we're owed money on. This is just for current operations. And in fact, the superintendents are jointly signing a letter to the governor, which reflects an attachment of how much money we aren't getting because of that veto. So we have a budget, but not really a spending.
So he's like sending us less money. Is that like across the board, or are there some areas, say like York County, that are getting a lot more?
Like Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, 50% of all the funding went to, I believe, 3 or 5 school districts. Philadelphia being the largest, but it was like Chester Upland, and then like Wellsboro or something like that. It was sort of a strange pick.
Even the school district of Lancaster had theirs cut. I think Columbia was the only school district in our area that actually was getting about what they were promised to start with.
Okay.
So more to come on that.
Saga continues.
That ends my report.
Thank you. Any questions on property and services? Hearing none, we'll move on to programming.
Good evening. I have 2 action items, of which I'm not going to do a lot of talking. I have people who do the talking for me. The first one is an information item for a new AP World History text, and Dr. Winters is going to talk about that.
Good evening. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to you guys about this book. With AP World History, we're in the process of AP is realigning their test for world history heading into 16-17. And so in speaking with Chris Epler, who is the AP World History teacher, and in ensuring that our students are prepared to do well on that particular assessment, we started looking at different books that were offered. And Chris deserves a lot of credit. He spent a lot of time really going through and reviewing, and I looked at them as well. And the one that we're recommending is called Traditions and Encounters. It's a McGraw-Hill text. I'll start it down here, and you guys are welcome to thumb through it. It's quite lengthy. But just to hit some of the highlights, and the document that I'm going to be working from, you also have attached to your board agenda that gives some additional information as well. This is a College Board approved text. It is aligned to the updated AP World History course and exam redesign. Content, which was a big reason why we liked it, is the content is organized by the College Board's key concepts and themes for AP World History. And so there are advanced placement, historical thinking skills, there are summaries, there are exam questions, primary sources. And one of the things that really jumped out to me as I was talking to Chris is that he said, Patrick, as I look through all these different books, he said, I feel really strongly that if we're going to be teaching advanced placement courses, we need to have resources that are going to push the kids at an advanced level. You know, AP World History is a college-level course. And the reason this book landed at the top of our list is because it's designed in such a way that it is truly at a college-level course. And the second document that is attached for you is a list of both high schools and colleges in the United States that are using this text, so that you have kind of a background there. The other thing that was a big selling point for us is that, given that we're a district that is one-to-one and that is trying to integrate technology, you know, the days of just using a traditional paper textbook exclusively are starting to go by the wayside. And the price that we get for this particular book comes with it a 6-year subscription to something called Connect, which is a smart book resource that allows students to access the textbook and other resources online. It's that whole interactive web-based textbook piece, and students can highlight while they read and do some of those online reading skills. The cost per bundle is $135. That's for the book, and then also the 6-year subscription for the online resources. We would need 50 bundles, and then you can see the total cost I have down there, which is estimated. The reason that we're bringing it to you at this point in the year is that we would like to be able to use it for summer reading, and so by making it an information item this month and then an action item next month, that would enable us to order the textbooks at the end of the year so that Mr. Epler would happen to use the summer reading resource for students. So that's why we wanted to bring it to your attention at this time. Are there any questions about anything I shared?
So to run like an AP, one that's going to get credit for colleges, you're saying there was like a, they, was there somebody who has an approved list of textbooks that would
so
qualify, or how does that?
That's a really good question. So what the College Board does is every so many years they redesign the different tests for the different AP courses that are offered, and then when that test design comes out, the textbook companies that are always in conversations with you know, the College Board look at that test design, and there's usually about 4 or 5 of them that put a text out that is aligned with current AP test redesign. This was one of about 4 or 5 books that we looked at, and this was the one that we settled on for the level of rigor and that Connect piece, that 6-year online subscription piece.
Which is great, I like that.
Which I think is huge.
As far as content, they're all going to be based on that, what the test is, with and they're all, so similar content, but maybe it's how it's structured.
And one of the things that we've really tried to focus on, and high school administration deserves a lot of credit with this, is to really try to increase that when a student signs up to take an AP course, that part of that experience is taking the AP exam at the end of the course. So really trying to increase those numbers. And one of the things I was really pleased with in talking with Chris recently, I think just about every single child we have taking AP World History this year is going to take the AP exam. And, you know, I'll be very eager to see the scores, but I can feel somewhat confident in telling you that I think they're going to be strong because I know the job that Mr. Epler does in the classroom, and those kids are going to be prepared.
And most colleges will accept that then as three credits or something.
It's typically, if you make a 4 or 5, then they'll accept it as college credits. Some schools accept a 3, but it varies from school to school. But 4 and 5 is usually pretty standard. I'll definitely keep the textbook, you know, in my office, you know, through next month. And if you guys want to borrow it, or if you have any questions, feel free to send me an email. I'll be happy to see that you get it, or field any other questions that you might have.
Do you know how many we're purchasing, what the cost for you?
Yes. 50 bundles, which includes the Smart Connect piece, so the total cost is just over $7,000.
My question isn't so much about this, but I did have a question. Did we ever get any feedback, or has any parents ever said anything about the book, the history of the 6 classes?
It's a really interesting question. No, you know, I mean, we had no negative feedback on that at all.
Because typically, a lot of the college AP World History are going to be very slanted.
That was a good book.
Yeah, and I would just say, just as a note of appreciation, I always appreciate how open-minded all of you are in terms of resources and books. You know, I know I speak for a lot of the teachers when. Yeah, it's very comforting knowing that we can, you know, bring a resource, you know, before you guys that we've vetted and looked at, and that there's always really good questions and great support from your end. So, you know, in my role, I very much appreciate that. It makes a big difference.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The second information item is an update for you on our birth to five pre-K and outreach, and Mr. Frederick, our Director of Elementary Instruction, is going to talk to you about that.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. About 2 years ago in 2014, a group of educators from each of the school districts in Lancaster and Lebanon County got together to talk about kindergarten readiness, because we felt like students coming into kindergarten weren't as ready as they used to be for kindergarten, in addition to the new standards that are expected of them to achieve in kindergarten. So what we found was each district in Lancaster, Lebanon County was kind of assessing that in a different way. So we got together and came up with some indicators that each of the districts in Lancaster, Lebanon County would use for their incoming kindergartners to kind of get an idea of how many students are ready to enter kindergarten, academically speaking. Obviously, there's social things as well that we want to look for, but just academically, how many are coming in ready. So over the course of a year and a half, we put together kindergarten readiness indicator, which each of the districts are now using to screen their incoming kindergartners. It's about 9 items that we're looking for as we screen them coming into kindergarten. And what we found, those 9 items that were chosen, is in the Lancaster, Lebanon County, about 25% of kindergartners coming in were proficient on all 9 of those indicators. And in our district, it was about 19%. So it varied between each of the items, but overall, it gave us an idea that there is a need coming into kindergarten to kind of address what's happening before kindergarten. So here in the district, we started to get the ball rolling. Last year, some of our support specialists and teachers ran some pre-kindergarten nights for parents and children ages 4, and families came as well to those. So we ran 3 of those nights in the district, and we did that again this year. The attendance there was well over 100 people that attended those. And basically what we did was provided activities that families could do with their children to address some of these areas, such as letters, numbers, things like that. Another initiative that's been going on, we've partnered up with some districts in IU 13 in a program called Plant a Seed of Learning, which is geared towards birth to age 2 children and their families. Throughout the year at Effordah Hospital and Lancaster Women's and Babies, we offer some evening sessions for families to come to. And you can see the topics over there. Basically, there are sessions that teach parents things that they can do with their children to start to prepare them academically and socially for kindergarten. Recent research, and it's not, there's also older research, shows that by the time students are entering school, about 85% of their brains are already developed. So it's important to get started on learning early, in the early years before school even starts for some of those students. Another thing that we're starting next year, and there's a flyer in there as well if you could pull it up, we're going to be running some daytime pre-kindergarten sessions for parents and children next year at each of the elementary schools. There's a flyer attached here.
It's the next one, I believe.
We're going to be offering 6-week sessions at each of the elementary schools, revolving around those 5 areas: music, PE, STEM, art, and library. And those will be co-taught by our specialists at the elementary school. So it's about a 45-minute session that parents and their child will be invited to attend. And the idea behind the sessions is that we'll be providing them some ideas and things to do with their children before they enter school to help with their readiness coming to school. And one of the other items that we just started this year, we purchased a program called Ready Rosie, which is a birth to age 5 program. It's an online tool that parents can sign up for and get daily emails or text messages with videos that are 2 minutes or less that gives them an activity that they can do with their child just in everyday, in an everyday setting. And I do have a short clip that I wanted to show an example of one of these videos. Anyone in our district, any district resident can sign up for these videos.
Okay, Ruby, we've picked out our fruit, and now we need to weigh it. I would like you to help me do that. This is a scale. This tells us how many pounds something weighs. So first we're going to do the watermelon. Do you think the watermelon is heavy or light? What do you think? Think it's heavy or light? It's pretty heavy. Yeah, it looks like it's hard for you to hold. Let's see how many pounds it weighs. Put it on here and watch the red line. It's about 5 pounds. Okay, now let's see if our oranges, do you think they weigh more or less than the watermelon? Can you hold them both and see? Which do you think weighs more, the watermelon or the oranges? Are the oranges heavy? They're both heavy. Well, let's see which is heavier. We'll put them on the scale. Oh, it says they weigh 3 pounds, and 3 is less than 5. That means our watermelon weighs more. Now let's try the lemons. Do you think the lemons weigh more or less than the watermelon? Can you hold them and see? Oh, yeah, you're like a scale. The lemons weigh less. Let's see how many pounds they weigh. They only weigh 1 pound. That's right. Okay, thanks for helping me weigh the fruit. Now let's get it home so we can eat it.
So again, this resource is available to any district resident to sign up for, and it gives them a daily video revolving around math, literacy, or just general social skills. Any questions? Any of those items?
So, is the, can you watch the videos, or are they mobile friendly?
Yes, yes. You can either receive them in an email or a text message, which would have been right on your phone.
And then, I don't know if you mentioned it, but you said there were 7, 9 indicators?
Yes.
And what were the indicators?
Yep, so the 9 indicators are name writing, whether or not a student can write their name, capital letter, recognizing capital letters, recognizing lowercase letters, initial sounds in words, can they identify what the sound is at the beginning of a word, book handling, can they hold the book the correct way and page correctly, oral counting, so how the benchmark for that is counting to 20, so they have to start at 1 and count up, number recognition, recognizing numbers 1 to 10 in random order, and then counting objects 1 to 1, so we would give them 10 objects and they would have to count pointing to each one. And then naming shapes such as triangle, rectangle, circle, and square. Those were the 9 things that were agreed upon. And those items were taken from various assessments that are out there for pre-kindergarten.
Do we know if that 19%, is there like a national number or something?
There's not, just because this is unique to we kind of had an idea that it was low, but this kind of verified that.
It's a local comparison. It's a local assessment. I remember when this came out, it was a United Way kind of pushed idea, and just trying to get all the school districts to agree on what those criteria should be was.
Yeah, it was a year long process.
And itself, it's the first challenge.
So the average for the Lancaster, Lebanon County was 25%, so our district was a little bit lower than the county average on that. So that's one area that we want to work on and somehow reach the families in that area.
So the Ready Rosie, are you getting higher numbers enrolled now? Because I think when I first had checked, it was, I've gotten to see my granddaughter doing this, and I think that's a
Yeah, currently there's 111 children enrolled.
That's good.
Yeah, so it has gone up since January.
So
we can do more than
you go out to the local community, like you said, Head Start and Cross Connect, and people that are, so how are they promoting this to the
families? We actually just had a meeting the other week with a bunch of organizations, my cross connections, and I'm working on a plan how we're going to get this out to the community. So I think it's a combination of organizations as well as us advertising a little bit better.
Like, I know it's a resource issue, but if there was some way that you could get into the homes to, I mean, that's the key, because I guess I'm hearing through my daughter who's attending these that, you know, she's saying that somehow or other the word has to get out a little better. And sometimes I guess if the teachers know it, but still to get that information in the hands of the parents and have them actually, if they would just log on and check it out, I think that they would keep
doing that. So at each of our sessions that we have, we do play a clip of the video, but one of the things that we're looking at is not everyone that needs this information comes to the session, so how do we get the information to them? So that's what we're working on a plan for that.
I appreciate your hard work.
Yeah, we have some ideas too. Actually. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's something as simple as, you know, getting all the pizza shops to staple a flyer to the box. Everybody buys pizza. I mean, it could be that silly, but that effective. And there's some other superintendents from around the state that have done some different things that we're looking at. The first meeting, as Greg indicated, was really pushed by Meredith Dopp, who spoke here earlier, also a friend of Jonathan Dopp. and Meredith has a network that's unsurpassed in this community. So really the trick is what you just said, getting to that mom or that dad who is watching three or four kids on the block. It is or her own little daycare center and the house. That's the movie that we get to. But we've got some ideas to get to. Now that we know what we want to say, because it took some months and almost a year to really put it down on paper what we want kids to have. We're getting, and I compliments to Greg, who's been attending those meetings and facilitated the first meeting here about 2 weeks ago.
One of the several things that I want to bring to your attention is that on the pre-K specialist schedule next year, we have included not only parents but caregivers. So if that mom has four or five kids and they want to bring, they're coming. And as long as they sign up, we're good with that. The other thing is that Greg did send out to Cross Connections and ESSN and Head Start and New Holland Learning Center, Early Learning Center was here at this meeting as well. All the flyers, so that's going to go out with to those families as well, or anybody that they come in contact with. And then last but not least, New Holland Learning Center will be coming, are going to be sending five teachers to our 95% group meeting or staff development in June, and Greg's figuring out how many extra slots we have, and we're going to reach out then to Kinderhouse and Pine Grove, I think is the one that's in Brecknock area. So those are other pieces that we're trying to put in place as well. Finally, we have two coaches that next year part of their responsibilities will be to connect with ESSN or Cross Connections and get into homes with where they may not be coming out, but we'll make that contact to get in the homes as well.
All right. Any other questions? I think it's great. I mean, I know this has been the goal of Dr. House for quite a while, and we've supported it, and I'm just really excited about it. I think there'll be a lot of opportunities to implement.
If there's no other questions, then it's my report.
Okay. Any other questions on anything program related? Okay. Management Committee, Dr. House.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first thing I have is an action item for next week. It's permission for me to attend the HR retreat sponsored by ID13. This is something I typically go to every year, maybe not every year, but most. As the information is excellent. You've heard Paul talk about Flip Steinhauer. Flip is one of the best in HR in the Commonwealth, I would argue, and puts together a really fine HR retreat, always cutting edge, always forward thinking. As a part of my contract, I need to have certain conferences approved by you. So that's what that is. The second thing I have, action item, I talked to a little bit last month about the need for additional administrative help at the elementary schools because of just changes in expectations and accountability, but also changes in the challenges that we have coming in the door. I'd like permission to post that position so that we can begin moving on it. The cabinet and I debated and discussed what we should actually call that person and what those duties should be, and we really ended up with just being pretty straightforward and just saying it's an elementary assistant principal. We tried to make it less so that it would not be quite an administrator, because I know everyone's a little conscious about adding to the admin team, but I do think we need this position, and I don't want to call it something else and have the person doing everything admin anyway, because that would be an insult to whoever we hired for the job. So I will tell you this, we're going to try it for 1 year, and it will be posted as a one-year position. So it's very likely that we would probably hire from inside for this first year. But I don't want to mislead you and say that it's a one-year pilot and then going to go away. My anticipation is that it will probably become a permanent position, but we want to try it out. We want to make sure that it's not just an assumption about fixing some things. We want to make ensure that it really is addressing the needs that we have, and we'll evaluate that at the end of next year, toward the end of next year, when we would come back to you and say, we're going to do this again, or we're going to do this for 3 years, or whatever it is that we recommend, or it didn't meet our need, and we're going to try something else. But I would like to get started on posting that, because if it is an internal position, it does have some ramifications for hiring. We would need a teacher to replace potentially a teacher that we're pulling up into this position. Are there any questions? We did talk also about the job responsibilities, and though that was not for sure at the last time I mentioned this, and the job responsibilities are pretty much in step with what a principal would do. So it's a little bit of supervision of teachers, it's a little bit of discipline, a little bit of management, leadership, evaluations, those kinds of things. So it's a little bit of everything. It really is a true assistant principal role that would be shared between primarily New Paul and New Holland, because they are our biggest populations, but also part of that time would be spent at the Brecknock Elementary School as well, a smaller school. Are there any questions?
I think it's actually a great idea to do it as a one-year kind of pilot. I could actually see it actually two positions potentially. I mean, just think about the additional needs that go on administratively besides just curriculum. I'm sure the building administrators would appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Jones, I've been sitting on this one for about 3 years. We've really been just trying other ways, and the needs continue to go up, as does the accountability, and we just can't. We're crushing our elementary principals. So I appreciate your support on that.
Yeah, I support it too. Just a thought here, since this person is going to be kind of going to all the elementary schools, because part of the job description had some involvement with the Birth to Five outreach program too, to maybe help whatever to do to facilitate that, or I don't know if that's would make sense or not.
Maybe if there's, you know, one of the things that we are going to get from this position is a little bit of continuity between the buildings that we may not have now. Now we work really hard to get that. But it will be interesting to see what that person sees and what we actually learn from that person, having looked at three very different leadership and management styles, which I like, because it brings a greater product when all three of those elementary principals work together. Sometimes it brings some headaches for Dr. Larkin, but truly, I wouldn't want three elementary principals that look all the same. I just wouldn't do it. So this person is gonna be the one who really has to learn. That'll be a challenge to work with three different bosses. Thank you. I really appreciate that support. John?
I do have one question. Is there any concern, because, like you said, they are working for three different bosses, lack of clarity in their position?
Now, we'll have, yes, there's always lack of clarity in the position. You know, we have all these job descriptions, and we consult, and I think our job descriptions are probably better or the best in the county in terms of what we have on the official job description, but there's always something else. You know? And just ferreting out, working for three different personalities is in itself a real challenge for somebody. So I think we'll be fine, but it's
not. So who's the answer to the question?
Yeah, who is this person?
Who do they answer to?
Oh, who do they answer? I'm sorry. That's a good question. I would say that they're going to answer to all three. And we do that now. When we do the evaluations for principals, all three of us sit. Now, they only meet with me. We may assign one of those principals to be the primary evaluator. But even in this case, my principals all get feedback from the cabinet. I deliver it, but it's from all three of us. Because all three of us represent different parts of the organization.
But that principal is only responsible for one school. Whereas this position has three potential schools that they would be spending their time with. New Holland Elementary felt like they were getting shorted the hours of this person. Like, how would you deal with those kind of issues?
Dr. Larkin will deal with that.
Enough said. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And now, we'll be careful. It's a good question, and I'm not trying to be glib, but it really would. Nadine works at that level with the principals more so than I, and she would be able to pull that information out. Good question. Okay. Moving along, two information items that then will be for action next month. Now, I'm not seeing an attachment. Justin, are they there as an attachment? Oh, you guys have them. So the tobacco policy, essentially the change in the tobacco policy is simply to encapsulate or to include the vapor products that are out there now, the smoking vapor products. So that's really the only change there. The other policy that I'll be asking you to pass is the one regarding naloxone, the response to a heroin overdose drug that we do have on site already. Through our SRO officer has them, but we will, because it's free, we'll get other sources. I'm not concerned about some of the concerns that have been voiced in the paper. You know, if there's someone who's overdosing on heroin, we're going to do everything we can to save their life, and we'll figure out the rest later. The policy that I'm recommending for you in this section was written for PSBA by Jeff Litz, so there's no need for our attorney to our solicitor to review. Our solicitor wrote the policy for PSBA, so I'm very comfortable with it. But it is something that I believe that the nurses feel a strong need to have, and I think the school district should have some coverage there regarding the policy, because it is somewhat controversial in some places. Any questions with that? The last thing, I have for you is a discussion item. Just pull it up. I can't recall how long ago it was. It's been at least a year or more that I read a little snippet in one of my weekly publications. I want to say it was Education Week. I glance at those because I don't have time to read as much as I'd like. And there was a mention of this concept of gunshot technology. So I started asking around about it, and no one really knew anything about it. Finally, this past fall, when I was up at the PASA PSBA conference in Hershey, I was doing the vendor tour in the big room and was asking folks if they heard of that. Finally, someone gave me the name of a contact of a company out in California, and the rest has been a discussion since. I thought that the cost would be prohibitive, but I think the cost is within reason, and I'll share that cost with you momentarily after I sort of explain what it is. We've talked back and forth with Keith in the room. Neil's been part of those conversations, as has Lotsi, our supervisor of technology and infrastructure. Essentially what this program does is it detects gunshots that go off in a building or on the grounds. Originally migrated from the Middle East and some of the things that they're doing over there. Big cities have this software and detection system as well. What's especially important, I think, from my perspective as a superintendent, is that this system will not only detect the gunshot, but will also track if the gunshot is progressing through a building from one sensor to another, and will be specific about the location of a building where a gunshot has taken place. That, in my opinion, and this is my speculation, could save a significant amount of time in the event of a serious event. With events like this, they're typically over between 4 and 7 minutes, a shooting, a school shooting, where either the police show up or the perpetrator takes his or her own life. 4 to 7 minutes is an eternity when you're being fired upon. I believe this system will cut that time down significantly, at least a minute. Minute doesn't sound like a lot of time, again, until bullets are flying and how many bullets can move in a 60-second time period. My concern is if we would have an event like this, the location of penetration would be chaos, and the people who would be needing to pick up the phone and report it would be running for cover. And so there would be a delay for certain until folks have an idea of what was happening. This system is instantaneous. It's monitored constantly by real folks, real people. And then it's an automatic dial to 911 and to any other place that you wish it to go. What would be required is sensors placed throughout all the buildings, and I'm recommending all the buildings would be included. The total cost, I'm sure I got this right, is the installation price is $150,000 plus our cost of a little over $25,000. Every sensor needs its own run from a home base, its own cable. And we've already gotten prices to subcontract that out. So it would be $25,000 to put all that in. So roughly, installation is I'm going to say 175, let's just say 200,000 just to make sure we're covered. The estimate I have is 175 for all the buildings in the district. Including all the outside areas. So a football game, a gunshot goes out, this technology will pick it up. There's a monitoring fee that goes beyond that. If we sign for 4 years, and we've really pushed these guys around, there's no other system like this in Pennsylvania at all. These guys are very interested in making a footprint here, and so they've worked with us on price pretty significantly from where they started off. There's an annual fee of $32,000 for 5 years. So first year cost is on the books, it's 175, let's just say 200,000, plus the $32,000 maintenance fee. So it'd be $232,000 for the system to be installed, and then 32,000 a year after that for the next 5 years. Keith and I have gone back and forth, maybe Ian and I, we've talked to cabinet, and it's a hard number to swallow when you're getting nothing, essentially, for it, when you start looking at all the teachers I could buy with $200,000, et cetera. So we've had a debate about it. At the end of the day, there's no price on somebody's life and security. And at the end of the day, I ask myself the question, would I want my kid's school to have this system? And the answer is absolutely yes. I know about it, and now I feel compelled to make that recommendation. But I do want to have a discussion about it and what your thoughts might be about it. And we've struggled with the number ourselves, although I will say it's much less than I expected such a system to be. These guys are telling me they have almost zero false positives and almost zero false negatives. In other words, the system can discern between an actual gunshot and gunshots being played on a movie. That has something to do. They have 32 different patents that protect their product. They're the only product like this in the country. And it's a firm from California.
Do they have it in schools in some states?
They do. I would have to verify that. I believe they said they did. Can you recall? I can't recall. I would have to verify that. I mean, they're the kinds of questions I would want to verify.
Right. And probably talk to them.
And talk to them. I want to say that they gave me a list of some schools, but I'll verify that.
So with this just practical application, let's say it was at the high school. So our SRO officer would have somehow be the first.
The system will dial 911 automatically for us and inform the police officers what door to go into.
Okay.
We can also then trigger an automatic lockdown. The automatic lockdown. One of my concerns is what I said earlier. The point of attack is going to be chaos, and until that information gets to the office, there's time lost.
They're isolating that area and locking it down.
We'd lock down the whole campus.
Right.
With one moment.
Effectively, we'd lock down.
Yeah, it would. Theoretically, the campus could lock down seconds after the first gunshot. Theoretically. Now, if it's an open area cafeteria, that those kids are running from.
Lockdown being putting
bolts in the doors.
I was thinking of the gates, right? So technology is cool, but it would be really cool if it could block a wing, drop the gates.
There are no more gates because they're not legal.
And the other problem.
They may just take the gates out.
The other problem with that is you're locking some
kids
in. If they're in a big room and they're all locked in and they can't escape. Where here you're talking about manually locking down each room.
Every room, we put in a really simple system. You've seen there's a bolt hanging.
Sometimes simple is the best.
It's that bolt drops in that pin hole and locks this door, so you don't even need a key. So any kid anywhere could lock a door if they had to. But we also have the ability to get through those bolts in 7 seconds, right, Mr. Walsh? Every school, every principal has a Sawzall in their office that if something bad's going on.
Have we had any unauthorized uses of those?
We have not yet. Have we?
Yeah.
Oh, we have.
Not here.
I mean, I'm not sure.
Sue.
Oh, that's right.
And she's good with an also.
No, she's good. Yeah. Imagine that, Sue Smith with a Sawzall.
She actually liked it.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, I mean, essentially what would happen is a code would, you know, it would be a bell or some kind of code that we all knew was an automatic deadbolt, and teachers would run to lock the bolt doors. You don't even have to have your door locked when those things are in it. And they're only buying time because you can get through them. You know, you keep pushing hard enough, they'll break. But it's not a conversation I thought I would ever have as a school administrator, I got to be honest with you. But, you know, I'm faced with the, and I'm sharing a burden with you. I'm faced with the knowledge that I have.
Now that we know it, and now if something happens,
and that's the same burden I'm sharing with you because that's how I figure it. Once I knew about it and didn't do something, and if something would happen, then why didn't you?
I think
yeah,
the technology is pretty cool.
Let me know what some of your questions are. So other schools.
Yeah, that's just on our due diligence, but this is whether conceptually or not we even score it.
What's the name of the company that provides the service?
Say that again.
The name of the company?
The name of the company is SST Secure Campus. My guess is they probably have more of these inner colleges than public schools. I really figured this would be $1 million and I would never bring it up to you. But we really flinched at the initial cost, and I think they're really interested in breaking ground in Pennsylvania, and they really worked the numbers for us. But it's essentially an insurance policy because it never pays anything back unless there's a problem, just like insurance.
Other thoughts or questions?
I'm really curious about what you're thinking because it's taken me a while to get to this point.
They say they don't have a problem with false positive, false positive.
Very few, Jenny. They've tested this. His story when we talked to the guy was they ran Private Ryan, the movie Private Ryan, on a video recorder while they tested a blanks and they picked up the difference. I want to verify that the product works the way they say it works, and that'd be my last stop.
I guess that would be the ultimate intruder drill.
And, you know, I hadn't even considered the outside thing, but the whole idea of someone coming to our campus for a track meet and bringing a gun.
About the starter gun.
Yeah, it's just the starter gun. Good question. I have to ask about that. That's another one. Okay. I don't think it matters. I think the system actually can detect the different, can actually identify certain weapons based on the sound wave that it makes when it.
Absolutely, with the decimals, and probably the starter guns are such a low charge.
It's the sound wave. It's the sound wave that's created by the. By the
is our rifle team going to set them up?
No.
Their air guns.
Should be okay. So I have two questions: starter gun and other schools. Anything else you'd like me to take a look at?
There's somewhere in Pennsylvania we can see a demo.
We would be the first in Pennsylvania to have it.
And they maintain all that.
We could go to California, though.
We'll be
volunteer. Well, no, I mean, like, because my security system at home has a glass break thing, and it's kind of the same concept. If somebody breaks the glass, it's that you detect that.
It actually detects the glass.
Yeah,
the
sound of the glass break. So it's probably the same.
Who maintains all that equipment?
Good question. The maintenance fee, they maintain that equipment every week.
So now, our equipment, monitoring and maintenance fee.
It's monitoring and maintenance. They say it's a low maintenance system. It doesn't get used for it, so it just sits there. We would be responsible for running the wire, but the wire is going to be there. The other thing that's nice is because of Neil and Keith, some of the planning we did in our high school, we're no longer pulling wires across ceiling tiles. We have trays and all that. We're set up to pull wire and do it efficiently, and that's what keeps that cost down too. Thinking ahead, and we put those pull trays in the ceilings above the hallways. So I share it with you because I had information I didn't want by myself, to be honest with you. And so, you know, I came to the same conclusion eventually that because I know about it, I almost feel compelled to move forward with it. So, I will get back to you with a couple pieces of information and come back to you with a recommendation next month. And that concludes my report. No announcements and no executive session.
Okay, any other announcements for the any board member? I have anything else to add?
What are the principles, Jackie, what are your initial thoughts on that? Or maybe that's a bad question.
No, that's okay.
In front of their boss after the boss. All right, skip it. What are your thoughts, boys?
Gee, Tom, we think it's a great idea.
If they come into secondary.
What it says is that schools are, you know, insulated to make it so that we can't hear sound. It's basically part of their design. Right. And so what this allows to do is, you know, if a gun goes off on this campus, you may not be able to tell anywhere. I mean, it could be, you know, because of the way that the sound is insulated, you may hear just a noise. And so this is going to give us that real-time pinpoint where it happened and then be able to alert law enforcement, be it the school resource officer or, you know, Chief Bowers or whoever else, and then hopefully be able to tie in some capacity with our video system, pinpoint where that threat is, like Bob was saying, lock it down and compartmentalize it all within seconds. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I don't know. I don't like to think, though. I'd rather think about what to do to prevent somebody from coming in, but
you can't.
I don't know how much that we can do. So
somebody is determined.
Exactly. So then we have to look at what to do in the event somebody does come in. I think it's a good first step. I think it's something
that's
good.
That's something I never thought about, how you try to keep sound to a minimum.
Sure.
School good.
I mean, just reading, you know, there's quite a few California schools that have gone after it, both public and college. So they're using it.
Thank you.
I'd visit.
My wife would even come along.
We need a fact-finding tour.
Yeah.
Well, Rodney goes on to
he can do a scouting mission.
Deputized. Okay. Any other?
Yeah, the other thought I have, you know, is that, like, what does preventive measures do to impact the mind of a would-be attacker? And SRO, you know, additional infrastructure, who knows? You know, maybe it's those kind of things that are taking that person who's deranged or wants to do us ill and saying, you know what, not worth the risk. I don't know what those people think about, but something to think about.
Yeah, you don't hear of somebody going and shooting at a police station.
Typically.
It's unfortunate we have to think like this, but you know, we do. So. Any other announcements, comments? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. We are adjourned.